Host and producer of Art Speak Radio, thank you so much for tuning in today, making KKFI a priority. This afternoon, we have several guests on tap for you. First, we have author, writer, Dawson Barrett, who is on the phone with us from out of town. He'll talk about Teenage Rebels, stories of successful high school activists from the Little Rock Nine to the Class of Tomorrow. We also have Courtney Lewis from the Kansas City Public Library. She'll be talking about upcoming events and movies and just all sorts of wonderful things that are happening at the libraries. We also have the wonderful lead talented Gabriella Lemons, who is with the Latino Writers Collective, and she's currently embarking on a new career. We also have Hammerspace Workshop proprietor Dave Dalton, who will talk about what it is that happens at Hammerspace Workshop. It's sort of like a gym for people who want to make things, for people who build and create. So let's get started first off with our first guest, Dawson Barrett. Dawson, are you there?
I am here. Thank you for having me.
Terrific. I want to tell our listeners that Dawson Barrett holds a PhD in history from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and he's familiar with the political struggles that teens and kids have had to face again and again throughout the U.S. He's currently on tour visiting bookstores, libraries, and community centers to discuss how teenage rebels have shaped the last 100 years of American history. So thank you so much for joining me. Dawson Barrett, your story, your book, Teenage Rebels, Stories of Successful High School Activists from the Little Rock Nine to the Class of Tomorrow. Let's first start off by talking about who were the Little Rock Nine. Who were they, and how did they change things in our society?
Sure. Well, the Little Rock Nine, as you'd guess, were nine African-American students in Little Rock, Arkansas, and they were the first black students to enroll at the previously all-white high school, Little Rock Central High School. Mm-hmm. And they showed up on the first day, but they couldn't get into class because the governor had ordered the National Guard to surround the high school and keep them out. And so one thing led to another, and ultimately the president of the United States at the time, Dwight Eisenhower, actually sent in the 101st Airborne of the U.S. Army to escort them to class every day for mm-hmm. that entire school year. Mm-hmm. And Ernest Green, who was a senior, ended up being the first black graduate of the high school that year. And often we end the story there, but actually the governor canceled public schools for the next year. So there were more protests and more court cases. But we kind of forget that after the Brown v. Board decision, that the students actually had to do the desegregating.
Wow. You know, it doesn't seem that long ago, but it was in 1957 that it became a historic day, September 25th, in the nation. Do young people recognize the power that they hold and making changes in our society? Certainly with this group, the Little Rock Nine, they brought that to the mind, to consciousness of the people here in the United States.
Well, you know, I think it's tough. I think that young people in our country occupy a very strange space in that, you know, in addition to the usual social pressures of being a teenager, that they also, they lack political power in that many of the people who make the decisions, mm-hmm. whether government or principals or teachers, you know, those people, they can't vote for those people. So they're not politically accountable to them. So I think they often feel powerless. Mm-hmm. But part of the idea of this book is to show that actually throughout U.S. history, young people have consistently challenged the rules, and they've won many times. So they actually have a lot more power than it seems like they do.
So if you were to compare and contrast today's struggles with our young folks in the past and compare that with the past, are there some similarities, or are we still sort of are they still sort of fighting the same fights?
Well, I mean, some of them, yes. I mean, I think some of them are sort of intrinsic to kind of being in that sort of powerless space of, you know, kind of in between childhood and adulthood. But I think there are also a lot of contemporary issues that students are confronting. I mean, if you even just look at the last year, there's been a wave of high school students protesting against things like standardized testing and how that has sort of changed in the last 10 years in our society. High school students are very active in the Black Lives Matter movement. So I think that, you know, in many ways these are old issues that still have relevance, but I think that they sort of have a new face in terms of you know, how they play out in today's society.
Well, and as far as part of your book, Teenage Rebels is the ideal way to show youth how powerful they can be when working together, and that can be anywhere from starting recycling programs or censorships, of course, still segregation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some of them are very serious issues, you know, like segregation, but also when I talk to young people, I point out that, you know, for young girls going to school, you know, they weren't even allowed to wear pants until the 1970s, and they had to protest for decades to not have to wear dresses every day.
You know, that seems so far-fetched, but it really wasn't that long ago, you know.
No, indeed.
You know, and with social media, does that help hurt or make others aware of the policies or injustice that the young folks, that teenagers are trying to change? I mean, do you think social media helps and they're making people aware?
Well, you know, I think it's sort of a mixed bag. I mean, I think that there is a mistaken assumption that if you just post something to Facebook that somehow that will change society.
Yeah,
and I don't think it does, because I don't think it, you know, puts pressure on people who can actually make the decisions.
Yeah.
I also think we're just bombarded with information now, because you see a news story and it gets lost very quickly. On the other hand, you know, some of the kind of biggest social upheavals of the last few years have really had an important aspect of them play out on Twitter or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a case just a couple of months ago in Tillamook, Oregon, where a high school student went out to protest against a couple of people who were carrying signs that said horrible things about homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
She went out to challenge that, and then she went on Facebook, and, you know, 20 or 40 of her friends came and joined her. So I do think it has the capacity to mobilize people, but I think it can also be misleading.
I would agree. Just liking something doesn't necessarily mean that you are changing. You are sort of in rather than in spirit, you're supporting that change, but it's just sort of passive and you know, helping out. What are some techniques that motivate and educate youth to become involved with certain issues?
Well, I think that's the big question, and I think it varies. That's actually part of why I'm coming to Kansas City on Saturday.
Yeah.
So can I talk about that for a second?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that okay?
Yeah, July.
Okay.
Yeah, Saturday, July 25th, you'll be at the Youth Empowerment Summit at the Plaza Branch Library at 6:30.
Yes. Yeah. So a librarian in Kansas City named Rick Thomas has been putting this together.
Mm-hmm.
He's very active in social movements.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is exactly what it sounds like, a youth empowerment summit. And so the plan is to get young people from around the city together to discuss what they want the world to look like in the future and start thinking about how they can actually make that happen.
Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the key components of social change is actually believing that your actions can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even if you like something on Facebook, if you don't think you can affect anything, then, you know, why would you go try, basically?
Absolutely.
So, you know, part of the idea here is to show young people that they can make a difference and maybe get them to start talking to each other about that.
Absolutely. So Teenage Rebels, your book on activism, on the activism work of students and young people that challenge unjust laws or policies imposed on them, that will be, again, that's Saturday, July 25th at the Youth Empowerment Summit at the Plaza Branch Library at 4801 Main Street at 6:30. And it does require an RSVP. So for our listeners, www.kclibrary.org is the website for more information about that. So will there be a question and answer sort of if people want to discuss certain items about your book or have a question about just activism at all, is that a possibility that will take place?
Yes, yeah, that's exactly the idea of the summit, is to have these conversations, and there'll be workshops, and there'll be talks, and it'll be a very social space. So, yeah, that's absolutely a great place to talk about that. People can also get the book elsewhere. It's available on the Internet. Microcosmpublishing.com is the publisher. So they can get it Saturday or elsewhere, but... I'm excited to have these conversations with young people.
That's, absolutely.
That's the goal for me.
You know, there's so much that we learn from them and that they learn from us, that it's just, you know, a connection, you know, that we all need. I can mention teenagerebels.org is the website for your book.
Yep.
Okay. And where are you headed off from here? Are you going across the country then to other cities and other summits?
Well, again, I'm doing kind of a combination of bookstores and libraries and youth events. Specifically, I've just been in the Northwest and San Francisco and Texas, and then after Kansas City, I'm headed to Illinois and Wisconsin. So I'm kind of getting as many talks as I can in. I'm actually a teacher, so I have to do this before school starts back up.
And Dawson, I want to ask you, as a younger person yourself, were you active in social justice, and how did you get your start or interest in activism?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say anything I did in high school was activism. Uh-huh. I didn't really understand how power worked.
Yeah.
I tell people that I did go on a homework strike for about a month, but it didn't work. I didn't win anything out of that.
Yeah.
But I was involved in sort of the punk rock community, and where I lived in Central Illinois, we had to put on our own shows. You know, as high school students, we organized the bands and handed up flyers. So we sort of created our own social spaces that way.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of protest, again, I mostly just worsened my math grade that way.
Well, but, you know, whatever it takes, you know, to sort of get you there, and now that you're encouraging and sort of supporting people, young people, to become involved is very important. You know, cultivating that next generation of, you know, thinkers and doers, you know, is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like to say that if football teams need cheerleaders, then everybody else does too, so...
Young people
who are trying to make the world better, I am definitely their cheerleader. That is my role.
I like that. I like that. So you'll also have books there at the library to sign, and will you be reading maybe a bit from your work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll be giving a couple of excerpts, and yes, there'll definitely be books to buy and get signed and all that stuff.
Beautiful. We love that about you. Thank you so much for talking with me this morning. That is Dawson Barrett. He's here in town on Saturday, July 25th at the Youth Empowerment Summit at the Plaza Branch Library at 4801 Main Street, 630. You do have to RSVP, kclibrary.org, for more information. And his book, Teenage Rebels, Stories of Successful High School Activists, From the Little Rock Nine to the Class of Tomorrow. You can find that information, teenagerebels.org. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, or this afternoon, Dawson Barrett.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Very good. We are going to take a real quick break, and then we'll be right back with our next guest. And stay tuned for ArtSpeak Radio.
Supporting 90.1 FM, Bird Productions Physical Theater presents Clowns by the Sea, a magical family-friendly adventure on, around, and under the sea. The Flock, a company of clowns, includes mermaids, synchronized swimming, sharks, and adventure. Maybe even a lovely bunch of coconuts. It's all a part of the Kansas City Fringe Festival, July 17th through the 26th. The Flock has four performances at the Westport Coffee House Theater. Tickets and information at kcfringe.org.
Democratic presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders were recently in Kansas City at the La Raza Convention giving keynote speeches. We will have those speeches in their entirety on this Wednesday's forum right here on KKFI, 6 p.m. every Wednesday night.
And we're back. You're listening to Art Speak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd. Next up, we have Courtney Lewis from the Kansas City Public Library. She's our Public Affairs and Media Coordinator. And we're going to talk about some upcoming events at the library, one including Dawson Barrett, who we just heard from. Welcome, Courtney.
Hi, Maria. Thank you very much for having
me. You betcha. You know, libraries just aren't the libraries that I grew up with, which is a good thing because there's so much more happening in the libraries. Tell us what's going on.
Well, we have to evolve as the needs of our patrons evolve.
Absolutely.
If you're not familiar with the Kansas City Public Library, we have our central library and then 9 different branches throughout the neighborhoods. And we have events happening at least 3-4 days a week. Everything is free. We ask that people RSVP so we can have a head count.
Sure,
but if
sure.
it's Thursday and you find out there's something you want to go to in an hour and you haven't RSVP'd, come on down. We just want to make sure we have enough seats.
You know, I have to say, one of the largest audiences that I ever witnessed was when our good friend Henry Fortunato spoke about his walking across Kansas and walking in general. That was a huge crowd at the Plaza Library.
He is. People like to come out to hear Henry talk about his exploits. He's the director of public affairs at the library, and he's just done an amazing job elevating our programming over the last 9 years or so. And, you know, speaking of that, we have these amazing programs coming up.
Let's talk about it.
You know, something that your listeners might really be interested in tomorrow night at our central library, which is at 10th and Baltimore downtown at 6:30, is the Power of Dialogue. This is a conversation with local activist Alvin Sykes, who has been so successful in what he does simply by using the power of his local libraries, research, access to databases, reaching out to members in the community to kind of guide him along. Well, he helped push and get past the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crime Act, which many people know as the Till Bill, to help throw money at these crimes which have just sat as cold cases for years. He pushed it. And it stalled in the U.S. Senate in about 2007 when former U.S. Senator from Oklahoma, Tom Coburn, he stalled it there. But Alvin was so passionate about this that he called up Senator Coburn's office and he actually said, can we have a meeting and try to talk about this? He got the meeting. The two of them sat down and through the power of dialogue, which is something that so many people just forget about, face-to-face, good old-fashioned meet-and-greets. They talked and they discussed the importance of this, and the bill was passed in 2008. Both former Senator Coburn and Alvin will be there tomorrow night. They'll be talking about it, answering questions, and just the kind of impact that the library had on Alvin's research, as well as what it means to sit down with someone who disagrees instead of lashing out like we see so often these days.
And tell us again which branch.
It's at the Central Library, 14 West 10th Street. Keep in mind that we have free parking. If you park in the library garage, the beautiful bookshelf garage, isn't it great? We will validate your parking, so make sure you bring your stamp in.
Do you think that's going to bring a big crowd? I mean, so would you encourage people to get there early?
We do. I would. Like, it starts at 6:30. Okay. I would encourage people to get there about 6 if they can.
Sure.
We have about 250 people already on our RSVP list. And again, if you haven't signed up, you can still come. But that just helps us keep track of seats. So we want to make sure everyone has a comfortable seat.
Absolutely. And what else do you have?
Well, if you like,
you have
I know we
so
do.
Much,
I want to preface this
it's
by saying go to kclibrary.org/events because we have so many things that I may forget some. But for those of people who like the Old West and cowboys, we have a great program coming up next Wednesday at our Trails West branch, which is actually on East 23rd and Independence. It's still part of the Kansas City Public Library system. It's called the Most Intrepid Western Writers Posse. We have best-selling author and screenwriter Chris Enns. She was born and actually raised in Norbert, Missouri. She specializes in stories of cowboys and cowgirls who shaped the Old West, the mythology, the history. And some of the stories they tell are true, and some of them are great fiction. But again, that's free, and that's at 6:30 next Wednesday at our Trails West branch. So it's a little bit smaller venue
than
Plaza Central, but it's got a great amount of room. So, and then I can't believe this, but we are looking at August already.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have some excellent things coming up. We are celebrating Eisenhower 125 this year with the Eisenhower Museum, Library and Museum out in Western Kansas.
Eisenhower. Okay. Yes. I'm thinking Truman.
Yes, the Eisenhower Presidential Library. Uh-huh. And on Bob Green, who is a wonderful presidential scholar, he's been to the library several times and gives a great talk, even if you're not super interested in that normally. Mm-hmm. If you go, he's wonderful. August 4th, Tuesday at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch, 4801 Main. He's presenting Liking Ike and Adlai, New Thoughts on the 1952 Presidential Election. He's written extensively about Ike Eisenhower and can speak to most any president, and he's going to be talking about that. This is free. There is a reception at 6, so you can come for light hors d'oeuvres and wine, coffee, water, whatever you'd like. Okay. Coming up on Wednesday, August 5th, The Unknown Travels and Dubious Pursuits of William Clark. This is Joanne Trogdon, who is the wife of William Leastheat Moon. She's going to be at the Central Library at 6:30, August 5th, talking about her new book, which sort of looks at the kind of questionable and nefarious pursuits of William Clark before he became part of the great exploration team of Lewis and Clark. So it's kind of a different way to look at him.
That's interesting. Yeah. Absolutely. My image of him is completely different. So
it's
intriguing.
When you read past his exploration with as part of Lewis and Clark, it's kind of sad what happened to him afterwards. He kind of went into debt, and he just didn't. He had a very sad life. But here's something interesting on a happier note. Thursday, August 6th, Adrian Burgos Jr. and Bob Kendrick of the Negro Leagues Museum, they're going to be at the Plaza to talk about They Too Played America's Game. It's Latino Americans in baseball, which 10 years ago may not have had as much relevance as it does now. I mean, it's amazing, and it's wonderful, just these great players. Again, that is free, and there's a reception at 6, so bring your little appetite.
You know, there is something for everyone at the library. You have some adult programming and guest visitors and that sort of thing, but you also have one thing that I listed down here was Mr. Stinky Feet Cosgrove, who will be at the library the 31st of July. Mm-hmm. I didn't list which branch, but he writes a lot of children's music and song and that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
And August 1st, this is something that is really, I don't know if it's new, the 2015 City Market Summer Book Sale.
Oh, we have that. Yeah. Oftentimes in the City Market, our friends of the library put that together. And if you are looking for excellent books and a great selection, before I started working at the library, I would go there all of the time. Yeah. It's at the beginning of the month. And you can generally find us sort of in that enclosed area by where the Steamboat Arabia Museum is.
Good, because you don't want to be out there steaming in the heat. You know, look at their books.
It's August in Kansas City. Yeah, we want to make it easy for you. We really do.
You know, and one thing that there's so many things about the library that I love. I love the films that are shown in the vault of the Central Library. But there's also the off-the-wall series that is on the rooftop of the library, and that's a lot of fun. So there's a movie that's coming up,
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
There you go.
It's part of our summer-long series. The theme this year is Down the Rabbit Hole. We just did Labyrinth on Friday.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's a free movie on the top of the rooftop, on the top of the library. It's free for everyone. Yeah. We encourage kids to come. Just keep in mind, because it doesn't get dark till later, we start the movies about 9, so if you want to have your kids in bed early, let them have a night out.
I once saw a movie there that was about Elvis impersonators, and Elvis was a part of the impersonator group, and I forgot what the title of that was.
Are you a big Elvis fan?
No, not really.
Oh, that would have been great.
it was just a great, fun time to be outdoors, but in the city on top of the roof.
It's great. You have the sounds of the city kind of all around you, and people love it.
So for more information, kclibrary.org/events. So you can go and look at any of the movies that exhibits that are featured at any of the locations. Mm-hmm. There's also reading groups, and there's so many different movies that are played in the different libraries. I think there's just about every branch has.
Absolutely,
movies.
There's always something going on. Yeah. So when you go, there's a section of our website that lists the different locations. Click on specific branches. and it'll tell you exactly what's going on certain days for the specific hours of book groups, and free kids programming every day of the week. If you're home in the summer and your kids are getting bored and it's 100 degrees and you want to get them out of the house, come to the library.
Yeah.
We have music, we have free books, we have toys, we have very colorful, bright rooms where you can sit with a book and just kind of let the kids play.
You know, and it's really a good way to get kids involved in literature and in the community, and you know, just really make the library their friend.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Think about when you first got your library card when you were a little girl, and it's probably a memory that most people love. So come and get your library card at the Kansas City Public Library.
When I was a kid, I don't think I had a library card. I think it was just kind of written on a piece of rock.
Really?
I'm that old, yes. But at any rate, thank you so much, Courtney Lewis, for coming out today. Stay tuned for ArtSpeak Radio. We'll be right back with Gabriella Lemons.
There's a light that shines from the window, through the rain as it falls on the park, and the cars that shush by sing, "Baby, don't cry," to the girl who looks out into the dark. On the street she sees the cars speeding.
Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd. Next up, we'll talk to Gabriella Lemons. I do want to mention to our listeners that was just a little snippet from Christian Henkel's Silver. That's the music from his noir ballet happening right now at during the French Festival, and Shea Estes on vocals. We have Gabriella Lemons here in the studio. Hello, Gabriella.
Hello, hello.
Very good. Gabriella Lemons holds a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing from the University of Kansas, and she is a founding member and former president of the Latino Writers Collective. And you're also a alumni from the Macondo Writing.
Writers Workshop, correct.
Writers Workshop. Welcome, my friend.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, you know, in the short time that I've known you, you've done so much. You started as a writer, raising your family. Hello, Dale. Hello, Javier. And you attended graduate school. How did you juggle all that and keep your creative juices flowing?
No sleep.
Yeah,
I worked a full-time job in Lawrence, Kansas, and I also, at the same time, simultaneously, I went to graduate school at night at the University of Kansas. It was a process of about three years of graduate school, but it was a very exhausting, but at the same time, very fulfilling time of my life. It took me a whole year to get back into the scheme of relaxing and learning how to sleep on a regular schedule.
Well, and with all that, very involved with the Latino Writers Collective, and I have to admit that I am one of the founding members as well, but you know, the community service that you helped organize and facilitate, anywhere from the migrant workers, workshops and that here in on the Missouri side in Lexington and Waverly and also in Lawrence, Kansas. You did a lot in the community. Talk a bit about some of that.
Oh, yes, I did forget. I also at the same time, simultaneously, I was president of the Latino Writers Collective, which, by the way, will be celebrating our 10th anniversary in the following year. I've always been an advocate of community service, and I've definitely done that through the Latino Writers Collective. I facilitated many writing workshops with children, with adults. Also, we are a very busy group. We've published 2 anthologies, and I was actually one of the anthologies got re-released. I was the actual editor of that one. We extended the version. We added a couple of the new members. But, the community service it differed from reading under a tent in book festivals to reading in salon shops in North Kansas City, to reading at universities, reading at local community colleges. We even did a program where we read in Spanish children's books. The readings were to be used at the local libraries in some of the counties in the area, like Wyandotte County. But no, we pretty much don't turn anything down, especially if it's community service, especially if it's serving children.
And I'm going to switch gears now and talk about your experience at Macondo. Tell us, first of all, tell our listeners what that is about and who is that with.
Well, Macondo is an organization of writers that was originally founded in San Antonio by Sandra Cisneros, the famous writer, Latina writer out of Chicago. You might know her book out there, audience. She's known most of all for The House on Mango Street. Which is prose, it's autobiographical. But she started this organization not only for just Latinos. It's a very inclusive group. Basically, it started in her kitchen in her house in San Antonio, and she invited writers, and from that it morphed into an organization where new members joined. You have to be selected for actual being in the membership.
Yeah, there's quite a few, I won't say hoops, but there's quite a few of things that are required when you apply for that, right?
Yes, you have to be actually like a member of MFA program, or you have to be have published a book. Maybe you're studying under a professor or a writer.
Sure.
You have to have some sort of a manuscript. But, you know, the guidelines are there so that, you know, they weed out people because they get a lot of actual applications every year for the new membership.
And that is in San Antonio, too, and during pretty much during the July month?
During the July month. Actually, I think it might be happening right now or actually next week. But, you know, it depends who shows up. But like I said, it's a very inclusive group. People from all over the country, all over the world are in the Macondo workshop. But it's mostly Latinos.
But for you, how was that experience? I mean, working with other people that were, that had been writing for a number of years. I mean, was there a pretty good camaraderie?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There are a lot of famous people in the group who, you know, have several books already that they've published. What happens in the workshop, actually, some of these members that have written books, or maybe some of them are professors, they will provide a workshop or a lecture. And, you know, they'll do a workshop on a certain craft, like nonfiction or memoir. I think the most fun workshop I ever participated in at Macondo was a storytelling, a digital storytelling. Hired somebody out of Santa Fe, a person that does a lot of storytelling, and I did my first storytelling video at Macondo. It was based on one of my poems, but there's a lot of diversity. The workshop is definitely inspirational to me because, you know, as a Latina writer, you don't have a lot of role models, especially when I first went to college. The first time actually I read Sandra Cisneros was in a college course, but she is definitely inspirational to me and one of my heroes. And in these workshops at Macondo, you meet these heroes. Like I've met Julia Alvarez, you know, and various other, even Native American artists have come to the workshop.
You know, one of my favorite Sandra Cisneros books is Loose Woman.
Oh, absolutely.
That's just,
I love,
you know,
the cover.
Yeah, a friend of mine gave that to me several years ago, and then I lent it to someone and never retrieved it, but I found one in a half-price bookstore, but and with her signature on it.
Her books are everywhere. Yeah, you always find a copy anywhere you go, at a used library, Barnes & Noble, you'll always find a copy of one of her books, especially House on Mango Street. It's taught all over the place, whether it's, you know, in college or in a high school setting. A lot of places make it a required reading.
You know, and you have some work today with you that you brought, and so would you like to share some a poem with us?
Sure, I'll read a short poem. I will preface with saying that I write bilingual. I am bilingual. I'm originally born and raised in South Texas, about 10-15 minutes from the Mexican border.
She's a Valley girl.
I'm a Valley girl. Y'all. But anyway, I just returned actually from home. I was down in South Texas visiting, and I forget every time I go down there, I forget, you know, that it, how fertile the South Texas area is. Everything grows there, cotton, watermelons, tomatoes. And I wrote this poem. It's I wrote it about my father. We constantly drove on the country roads, and that's how I learned what the crops were. And algodón is cotton, and grows a lot. It's grown in South Texas, along with like sugar cane. But I wrote this poem because of my father and because of our experience driving the back roads of South Texas. It's entitled Flying, and it's a very short prose poem, but here we go. Flying. Our truck gathers speed as we approach the hills of El Valle, and for a few seconds I am in flight. We accelerate, embark the horizon's next hill. We brake, drive past algodón, pull to the side of the road. Terremotos on perfectly spaced rows. I follow. My father plucks a bowl, exposes white fibers in my palm. Where close comes from, he says. Fertile is my father's land.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you, Maria.
You know, I think we are often, as creative people, often inspired by what is around us, or maybe a conversation or past experience or growing up and that sort of thing. And you pretty much write what you know about, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I always preface, I do a lot of readings, especially with the Latino Writers Collective or through them. And I always preface with saying that everything I write is narrative. One of the strength I've been told in my poems is the four senses. I write what I touch, what I feel, what I heard. The senses are very important to me. And it was interesting because I was very lucky when I first was getting my bachelor's degree in English at the University of New Mexico. Sandra Cisneros came to the university as a visiting professor, and I just happened to be in her class, and I remember getting her poems back that she had reviewed, and she would put little like eyes or mouths or little ears where she either liked that I had used the four senses, or she was wanting me to add more of the senses.
Now, as an educator and facilitator of workshops, do you look for that or try to encourage or cultivate that in people that you work with, students that you work with?
Absolutely. I believe the senses are a gateway to creativity. You know, sometimes, Maria, I know that we've talked about this, it's sometimes just a smell will, you know, create some memory, and next thing you know, you're scribbling on whatever is in hand, a receipt of a Target, you know, or the back of a book. You're scribbling down ideas because of a certain sense that was triggered by by a noise.
I try not to do that anymore in my car. I used to have, like, I would do that and just try to scribble something, and then I got to the idea of putting Post-its. So I had Post-its all over the roof of my car. Now I just take my voice recorder and,
true,
you know,
technology.
If I can dig it out of my purse. You know, we're going to take a real quick break for some underwriting, and we'll be right back with Gabriella Lemons.
All kinds of gay by the ocean, all kinds of straight by the ocean, all kinds of love by the ocean.
Supporting 90.1 FM, Mike Dillon, live at the Brick, Wednesday, July 22nd. Mike Dillon, at the Brick, 1727 McGee, Kansas City, Missouri, Wednesday, July 22nd. All info at thebrickkcmo.com.
Seven Stages, Seven Stories is an original, self-revelatory play inspired by those living with Alzheimer's disease and their families, friends, and caregivers. Produced by Kansas City Senior Theater for this year's Fringe Festival. Times and venues at kcfringe.org. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Lainey Mandel at Davies Uptown, supporting 90.1 FM, Thursday, July 23rd at 7 p.m.
I can't be seen kissing make a key.
Lainey Mandel with special guest Courtney Marie Andrews, Thursday, July 23rd at 7 p.m. at Davies Uptown, 36th and Main. Tickets and info at daviesuptown.com.
Dream about girls, girls.
Welcome back to Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, sitting here with Gabriella Lemons. She's an educator, writer, author. She's just a very dynamic young woman. Welcome, Gabriella.
Hello, hello. Again.
So we were talking about poetry being something very, really sort of touching all the senses. Do you want to read another piece for us, for our listeners, so they can get a sense of your style and maybe close their eyes and they can get a sense of smell, touch?
Sure, sure. Actually, my style has always been referred to as kind of gritty. But
gritty, how so?
Oh, gritty. You know, I write about themes that make people uncomfortable a lot of times, but which I'll demonstrate in you know,
sure.
a poem I'll read further in the interview. But I'll go ahead and continue with the father theme. I wrote this poem because of my name, because people constantly misspell my name, and also because... I remember, you know, moving from South Texas to Austin and thinking that, you know, everyone that was brown-colored, had brown skin, spoke Spanish. And I realized that that's not the fact. And anyway, so I wrote a poem describing the relationship between me and my father and the Spanish language. It's entitled, "My Father Often Told Me That If I Didn't Learn English, Spanish... He'd disown me. No daughter of mine, he'd say. Not like those smallest-stained girls that live in Austin or San Antone. Not like those girls whose roots to the Rio Grande are shallow. Sorry, but I don't speak Espanol, a Prieta once told me in Austin. She swayed past me in her tamale thighs, and let's just say that those curves were not the panhandle. I don't speak Espanol. She tells me as if the color of her skin came from a bottle of sunshine, as if she'd paid for her tan at the Casa del Sol. She dismisses me as if I were La India Amarilla, carries on as if assimilation is one of the Ten Commandments. Thou shall assimilate. Speak with twisted tongues, have names that end in double E's, Y's or I-E. Clotilde is now Coti with a Y, Sandra now Sandy with double E's, and Christina now Christy ending in I-E. And then we have Gabriela, that is now Gabrielle, but I say Chale, not my name, not my grandmother's name. Don't change it. Not like at the Pantheon, where my father took me to visit her grave, where I found the misspelling engraved in stone, Grabiela. I confront my father. Throw my fist in the air. This is not her name. This is not my name. How could this go unnoticed? Papa, the man who had said, no daughter of mine, realizes that as he brings down my fist, I had also inherited fury, furia in dos idiomas. It spans two countries, a border, and the tip of a daughter's tongue.
Beautiful. Wow. That's a very powerful
piece.
Thank
you, Maria.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever heard that.
The border is very important to
me,
crossing borders, because I grew up, like I said, 10, 15 miles from the Mexican border.
Sure. You know, and there's, it's so, ripe with meaning and not only just as a line, that division, the borders, but an emotional sort of connection too for you, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, and division between, people that speak the language or don't speak the language.
Yeah.
I don't criticize. I mean, for certain reasons, people don't. I mean, I recall being told by people that if they spoke the Spanish language in school, that they would get in trouble. And I felt some of that in grade school.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard, not to speak Spanish, especially where I grew up, where 70-80% of the student population is actually Latino.
But I want to ask you, the expectation of being a Latina poet, writer, are there expectations from other people that it should reflect the culture always? When I ask you that, I think in my mind of an exhibition of work that I was in, where it was a Latino artist, and one of the critics, art critic that wrote about the program at the time, had said, "Well, you wouldn't realize that this was a Latino art show because there's not any obvious symbols." So it can be a good or a bad thing.
Oh, definitely, I understand what you're saying, Maria, and I think that having had attended graduate school where I was one of the only few minorities, I think that in the academia that my work was well received. But, I did get the occasional, why are you using the Spanish word in this particular stanza? And, my answer was because that's how I think, that's how I dream, that's how I speak, that's my culture. And, as many people know, that there are words that are not translatable into English. But I understand what you're saying. I would say personally that my work, as well as yours, Maria, it's universal. We share, we write about universal themes. I write about, missing home. I write about women issues. I write about feelings.
So there's no, you don't have any sort of limits. I mean, you don't, listen, I don't want to tackle this subject or that subject. That's just too much. I mean, there's nothing that you won't write about.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Actually, I just came back from Iowa, attended a conference in Iowa. Mm-hmm. I was on a panel, an academic panel in Iowa, and the topic was actually writing the hard thing. It was me and two other women writers, friends of mine, that we shared our poetry and our work about writing the hard thing.
So what are some tips, some advice, what are some things that you would offer writers about writing about the tough things, the hard things?
Well, number one, I would say that don't write about these things until you're emotionally ready. For me, I've been writing for 20-some years, and some of the poems are yet to be written. They're margins on a book somewhere or on a receipt from Target. Sometimes, it takes years to tackle certain issues.
Sure.
And like I said, anything could trigger those emotions or that poem.
So in a sense, it will kind of tell you when it's ready.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I always tell people that, you know, they ask me why I'm a poet, why I write poetry, or mm-hmm. I even also write creative fiction. Mm-hmm. I say it's because, you know, it's cheaper than therapy. Yeah. You know, but my advice would be to start somewhere. Uh-huh. Even uh-huh. if it's just a couple lines. I would say that you'll find that you have more in common with mm-hmm. everyone else mm-hmm. out there. And, mm-hmm. you know, you might learn from somebody. Somebody might learn from you.
Sure.
But don't be afraid to write down how you feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was a conference that you attended this past weekend?
Actually, it passed about a month ago. Uh-huh, yes, uh-huh. It was a very good conference.
Well, I know you're a very busy woman, and recently you have left the publishing company for... You had been there maybe 20 years?
17 years,
wow,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so your new endeavor, you're going to teach...
Yes, I'm going to be a teacher.
Let's talk about that.
I'm leaping into it. Uh-huh. And I believe that... Part of the inspiration to become an educator, I'm in a transition to teaching program right now at a local university where I'm taking courses while I earn my certification. Mm-hmm. But I think it was mainly inspired by working with the Latino Writers Collective and with being a writer, being in the community.
Yeah.
I felt that my purpose in life was to be a mentor,
mm-hmm.
especially mm-hmm. to minority children or not. I mm-hmm. mean, whoever is willing... You know, to take my help and mentorship, you know, that's what makes me happy.
Yeah. I find that a lot of creative people, whether you're a writer, painter, musician, or that, I mean, there's that element of education that's such a strong connection. You know, sharing your gift, sharing your talent, really sort of putting yourself in the community and you know, helping others, mentoring. I think that's something that I found that's very common between creative people, you know, like I said, musicians and all that.
Absolutely. And I think part of my responsibility as somebody who's got a graduate degree is to put myself out there, you know, go to the communities that are, you know, underprivileged, mm-hmm. you know, financially strained people. You know, so they can see people with, you know, their own, you know, financial background, maybe their own cultural background, see somebody who's their skin color, somebody who understands them.
Act as a role model.
Absolutely say, you too can, you know.
I think that's terrific.
And I'm very excited because the school I'll be teaching at will be in the Topeka School District, and it's a very diverse school.
Well, and that in itself is going to be a challenge, working in the schools in the Kansas, so...
Yes, but I'm so excited about it. I really am.
So what will you be teaching?
I will be teaching language arts.
Uh-huh.
I will be teaching at a school, a public school, that is starting a dual language program, and mm-hmm. I'll be teaching one of the classes in Spanish.
Wow.
That'll be great. Of course, I'll have to learn all the jargon, you know.
And try not to get pushed into the lockers because you're such a tiny woman, but, you know, they will mistake you for a student. You'll be sent to the principal's office on the first day. Trust me on this. So what else is coming up, kiddo? What are you gearing up for? Just the school year?
I'm gearing up for the school year, finishing up classes at the university, doing everything I can to get up to speed on lesson plans, core standards.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable what teachers need to know these days.
It's an exciting time for you, and I'm sure, you know, it's a little scary too, but...
A leap of faith.
Yeah.
After, you know, working a full-time job, being a president of a nonprofit, the mm-hmm. Latino Writers mm-hmm. Collective, and, mm-hmm. you know, going to graduate school, I'm invincible.
You are. You're a superwoman. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Gabriela. Stick around. I want to tell you a little bit of what's happening up in the future for KKFI.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing your work with us. I want to invite our listeners and supporters of KKFI to join us in this most unique fundraiser. It's called White Noise, Embracing the Spirit. Now, this is a one-day retreat for writers, poets, painters, photographers, and just people who are curious to explore, write, paint, create on the grounds of one of the most haunted locations in the Midwest, which is the Belvoir Winery. And it's a family-owned establishment that's located on 170 breathtaking acres in a complex that was formerly known as the Oddfellows Home in Liberty, Missouri. Have you ever been there, Gabriela?
No, never have.
Yeah, well, it's just north of
Kansas. Sign me up, Maria.
I'm telling you. During this retreat, you'll learn about the 130-year rich history of the property, which is really a beautiful property. It has, you know, the vineyards, the cemetery. It has an abandoned old folks' home and a hospital. But what you'll do on that day, which is Sunday, September 13th, from 1:30 to 6 p.m., you'll just gather your art supplies, cameras, notebooks, journals, and come explore the grounds. And it's a one-day retreat, again, from 1:30 to 6 o'clock. And it's a fundraiser for KKFI for only $15. So you can find more information here on our website at kkfi.org. Or if you would like, you may email me at mariatortilla86@hotmail.com for more details and information, directions, whatever you need. So that's coming up in September. And that will be a blast, because in September, you know, things will start to get a little bit cooled down. I want to thank my guest today, Dawson Barrett, author, and Courtney Lewis from the Kansas City Public Library, and of course, Gabriella Lemons. We'll have to have Dave Dalton from Hammer Space Workshop back. You know, life happens. This is real radio. Next week, July 29th, artist Jillian Kirkpatrick and folks from the Toy and Miniature Museum will join us here in the studio. That's at 52nd and Oak. Now, they're reopening their museum August 1st, and it's been closed for a year-long renovation and remodeling. So they'll be here to talk about that, and I believe we're going to have some tickets to give away for that opening August 1st. I want to invite our listeners to stay tuned for Afternoon Jazz with Jeff Harshbarger coming up at 1. At 3 o'clock, Old G's Hangout with Groovy Grant. 6 o'clock, All Souls Forum. 7 o'clock, American Roots. 9 o'clock, Classical Challenge. And, you know, I thank you so much for making KKFI a priority. You know, be sure to like us on Facebook at KKFI, or you can like me, Art Speak Radio, on Facebook as well, because you know what? I really like you. So thank you all for tuning in today. Honey, I'm coming home.